WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now tuned into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, on this Friday, March 31st, 2017. How about that? Yes, we have approached the final day in the month of March. Really can't believe that this month is just completely flown by. A ton of chatter surrounded around, of course, what this month is all about in the world of sports, that being college hoops. That's right, and we will continue talks in the world of college basketball, seeing as though the Final Four, those games will take place this weekend. We will know who will play for the entire enchilada, which will take place on Monday. We will know in just a day. Should be fun stuff. And as we've been doing throughout this entire month, we will invite to the show Deshaun Tate, college basketball producer, reporter, and host for CBS Radio down in Atlanta. Deshaun has touched down out in Phoenix, Arizona. He will be there covering the Final Four. He will join us on the show live from AZ to preview those two matchups. You don't want to miss that. Again, South Carolina, Gonzaga, Oregon, and UNC. We will also give you a preview of tomorrow afternoon's spring game. Yes, the spring game is still on, folks. Michigan State football will take the gridiron. A lot of fans should be there. Looking forward to seeing how the crowd looks, to be honest. Last year, Michigan State set a record for attendance at the spring game. I'm wondering how those seats will look this year. Anyway, tomorrow at 3 p.m., we'll preview what to look forward to on the gridiron, and I will address the question that we've been toying with this entire week, whether or not Michigan State should even hold this spring game, seeing as though what is taking place off the field when it comes to this sexual assault investigation that is still underway. We'll address that question. Also, the Detroit Pistons top the Brooklyn Nets yesterday. It was a nail biter, though. It was not easy. How does the playoff picture now look for the Detroit Pistons? A lot of Pistons fans were, like myself, LeBron James fanatics last night, hoping that the Cleveland Cavaliers would top the Chicago Bulls, but Denzel Valentine and company had other plans on national TV last night. We'll talk about that. And on the back end of the show, we will have Reflection Friday and more for you. And you know what? I want to pose an interesting question to you all concerning the whole NBA MVP race as well. Yeah, I may ruffle a few feathers with what I have to say today concerning that race, in particular one stat. Yeah, we'll chat about that. I'll bring that to your attention in just a moment. If you want to be a part of the waves, you know that number, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Leave us a comment there. Of course, I will read your comments live here on our airwaves, where we are currently also live streaming the show. You can also even tweet us. At Al Martin, WKAR is my Twitter handle. If you want to tweet the show, you can do that at WKAR_sports. Let's start this party like we always do. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners. With his contract set to expire, actually, today, MSU football recruiting coordinator. That's right, Curtis Blackwell, folks. Get this. The university has decided to extend the contract of Blackwell until the end of April. Although it has not yet been confirmed if Blackwell's suspension is directly related to the sexual assault case. But of the four warrants received, one was for an MSU staff member obstructing an investigation. This charge can possibly be a 2-year felony. Now, this could be a distraction for a football team that is looking to erase a 3-9 season last year. It can be difficult to focus on football, but head coach Mark D'Antonio claims that the team is stronger than ever following the recent events. Fans can get a feel for this upcoming year's team tomorrow during the green and white spring game, 3 p.m. at Spartan Stadium. Unlike spring games in the past, this one should bring a pretty good attendance. And I must say, though, I scratched that statement. Last year, they did set an attendance record. I was really surprised. Actually, I sat in the crowd for the first half of that spring game last year. Pretty admirable how the spring game has really taken off in years. A lot of questions for this team. Really interested to see how the press conference goes tomorrow. All right, MSU's Torrey Jankowski. Well, I should say MSU's Torrey Jankowski. That's how the announcers pronounced her name last night during the college basketball three-point contest. That really got under my skin. Any journalist, and I've done it before, let's be real here. Every journalist has done it before. But when you're on a national stage and you're prepping for an event like that, you can't mess up names, dude. I don't know who the announcer was. His name was Chris. I don't know what his last name was. Don't know what his last name was, but he just kept on messing up Torrey's name. It got under my skin. I went on a bit of a Twitter rant about that last night, but okay, that's off my chest. And Michigan's Derek Walton Jr., they both competed in the college basketball three-point contest last night, each made their final appearance in a college uniform. Jankowska had a rough night, scoring only 8 points in the first round. She was eliminated, finished seventh in the women's competition. And Kansas State's Kindred Weissman, she was great last night, beat Oregon State's Sydney Weiss 18-17 in the final to claim the women's title. Derek Walton Jr. placed third. Walton lost, but did so in style, wearing a blue Michigan uniform and socks, embellished with a picture of himself. Fly his socks in the game last night, folks. If you didn't check that out, do a quick Google. Pretty cool stuff. He scored 15 points in the semis, finishing behind Iowa's Peter Jock and Grand Canyon's Dwayne Russell. Peter Jock won the men's title, but then, of course, and I love how college basketball does this, they pit the winner of the men against the winner of the women. So we saw Weissman go against Jock, and get this, they both actually tied at 16, but according to a tiebreaker, or like a four-rule tiebreaker, get this, Weissman actually beat Peter Jock to claim herself is college basketball's top three-point shooter, male or female. Pretty cool stuff. All right, the Michigan women's basketball team will take on Georgia Tech in the WNIT championship game tomorrow at Detroit's Callahan Hall. Michigan held off Villanova 65-61 to advance to the title game against the Yellow Jackets. Sophomore Haley Thome scored a game-high 22 points, grabbed 7 boards, and tallied 3 blocks. Count them. GT erased an 11-point deficit to defeat Washington State 69-61 Wednesday night. Both Zaire O'Neal and Elo Edeferinco finished with double-doubles. Tip time set for 3 p.m. on Saturday, CBS Sports. So you have the MSU Green and White spring game taking place the same time as that WNIT championship game. That should be a fun one, though. Congratulations to Kim Barnes-Rico and her squad once again. All right, following a 3-2 defeat to the Western Michigan Broncos on Tuesday, the Michigan State baseball team will look to bounce back like Big Sean. I like that. Whoever wrote that in my script, props to him. Brandon Hughes and the Spartans will host the Minnesota Golden Gophers for a 3-game series. In the first game, which is set for today at 3:05, Alex Troop, who is 3-1 on the year, will be the starting pitcher for the Spartans. As for the Gophers, junior left-handed pitcher Lucas Gilbreth will look to improve his 2-0 record. Games 2 and 3 will take place Saturday and Sunday, both at 1:05 p.m. Fans can follow the series, which will be streamed on BTN to go along with Spartan Sports Network. They will have live audio stream of those games. It was not the prettiest win, but the hometown Detroit Pistons snapped their 5-game losing streak. Ish Smith had an efficient night, usually does, scoring 21 points, grabbing 6 boards, and dished out 5 assists to go along. In 29 minutes of gameplay, Andre Drummond scored just 2 points. Let that sink in. 2 points for Andre Drummond. Marcus Morris added a triple-double with 28 points, 13 boards. Fans at this point would rather see the team lose out just for a nice draft pick, but it's a little too late to try to start that now, right? You need a really big tank in order to ensure that. However, the Pistons have 6 games remaining in the regular season to make a push for the 7th or 8th seed in the East. Looking at the teams left on the schedule, Houston, Toronto, and Washington, all who are locked into the playoffs. It is unlikely that the Pistons will make the playoffs. Anything is possible, though, especially with teams resting key players. But look at the Chicago Bulls. You look at the Miami Heat. It's going to be a dogfight here, folks. Next up for the Pistons will be the Milwaukee Bucks on the road. Pistons currently have an 11-26 record on the road. Tip time set for 8 p.m. Detroit Pistons star guard Kentavious Caldwell-Pope was arrested early Wednesday morning on suspicion of drunken driving in Auburn Hills. Police said Caldwell-Pope was pulled over around 2:50 a.m. after being clocked driving 45 in a 25 miles per hour zone. The officer said when he walked up to the car, he smelled alcohol. He put Caldwell-Pope through a sobriety test and placed him under arrest. KCP hasn't had the cleanest driving record. KCP received 6 citations for speeding in Georgia from 2010 to 2014. He received a ticket in 2015 for driving 35 in a 30 mile per hour zone. That's petty. Come on. 5 over. I just did that going to the studio. Don't tell nobody, though. All right. And not having proof of insurance in Bloomfield Hills. Last May, he was ticketed for unauthorized use of an HOV lane in Georgia. And police said there are no suspensions or major issues with his past driving record. All right. Keeping it pushing. The Detroit Red Wings started off as a close game. That quickly got out of hand, after the Wings gave up 3 goals in the second period, which put them down 4-2 heading into the final period. Now, Tampa, the Lightning, quickly scored in the final period, leaving the Wings to play catch-up. Mike Green later scored during a power play, but our efforts still weren't enough as the Wings fell 5-3. And, of course, the Wings are mathematically eliminated from the NHL playoffs for the first time in 26 years. All right, and as we approach opening day for the Detroit Tigers, fans can expect a few new additions when they enter Comerica Park on April 7th. I'm particularly looking forward to this one, folks. Even though I'm trying to get in the gym, eat right, eat healthy, whenever I do go to a Tigers game, I'm binging because, of course, Detroit, home of the Coney Dog, the Tigers look to add some new flavor to that tradition with the Coney Dog Pizza. I kid you not, it's a walking heart attack, but at the same time, it sounds scrumptious, right? It will be a Little Caesars pizza topped with ingredients of a Coney dog. There are questions regarding whether or not this will be a big hit for the stadium. That question will be answered on opening day, and if I had to guess, I would say yes, it's going to be a huge hit. Home run, pun intended. That wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. Phone lines are open, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527 is the number to call. You can also weigh in at Facebook.com/currentsports and tweet us at WKAR_sports at Al Martin WKAR. Let's get this train a pushing.
There are no easy challenges. There wasn't an easy challenge when I came here. So, this is part of the deal. This is part of the reason that I was chosen as the head football coach here. It was to lead in difficult times, not to lead, not to put a hat on and walk around the Rose Bowl and say, hey, we won the Rose Bowl. That's not the time to, you find out who you are. You define yourself when things fall around you. You're defined as a leader. And so this and next season, these will be challenging moments, but that's why I was hired. So those are my intentions. But I do think that it was a group effort, a team effort, reaching all the way to our administration and to our president's office, because I think it's important that we all work together on this and that we not have our own separate identity in this situation.
And that is how we start this Friday afternoon version of WKAR's Current Sports. So honored you've allowed us to be a part of your weekday afternoon here on WKAR AM 870, FM 94.5. The comments from head coach Mark D'Antonio concerning his football program. As you all know by now, Michigan State head coach of the MSU football team, Coach D, held a press conference on Tuesday morning at 11 a.m. in the north end zone. Current Sports was in the house. I was there present. And there are many mixed feelings about tomorrow afternoon spring game. Many mixed feelings. Of course, a lot of Spartan fans are excited just to see the team out there on the field. But can't help but think that those emotions are a bit tempered, seeing as though this team did not have a great year last year. Again, 3-9 on the season. No bowl game. An odd year. Very odd year. And then, of course, what took place away from the football field in the offseason. Three unnamed players involved in a sexual assault investigation. We still don't know, again, who those names are, because it's in the hands of the prosecution whether or not they want to proceed and criminally charge these young men. Just don't know. So, and we've taken about, what, 3 days away from this conversation now when it comes to the spring football game, when it comes to Coach D and company, but again, with the spring game happening tomorrow, I want to address it because I tend to agree with a lot of the local media here who walked away from that press conference on Tuesday morning in saying that I don't believe that Michigan State should have the spring game. Got to be real with you all. I made that be known this morning as I chatted with our very own Scott Pohl of WKAR's Current State. And I didn't get a chance to back up my claim when I because I said it on yesterday's show as well. And I got a few comments from you all via our Facebook page. And, you know, many of you commented and said, hey, Al, why cancel the spring game? We want to see the team out there. Coach D is trying to move past this. And I think having a spring game will help in those efforts. Well, I think a lot of people aren't looking at the bigger picture here. Michigan State, in having this game during this time, where you are, in the midst of a sensitive investigation such as this one, you know what fans are going to do? Fans are going to go to that game tomorrow afternoon. They're going to sit in the stands. They are going to look down at the sidelines, evaluate the numbers. They're going to look like scouts out there, to be honest with you. Binoculars in hand, pen and pad, just trying to see who isn't playing or who isn't even in the building for that spring game, and they are going to draw a line toward the sexual assault investigation. Unfairly draw a line to that investigation. Because, you know, when Coach D, when he was asked whether or not there are other players who are suspended, other players suspended that have probably nothing to do with the sexual assault investigation, Coach D'Antonio said, yeah, there are others suspended. Now, the reasons could vary here. Those players could not be playing due to injury, maybe due to academic problems. Who knows what those players aren't playing in that game tomorrow afternoon. But, you know, fans, especially those on social media, because we know social media has no chill, those fans are going to get behind that keyboard or whip out that smartphone and say, blah, blah, blah isn't playing. I wonder why. And that's just not fair. Because, again, some of those players probably have nothing to do, possibly have nothing to do with that investigation. Yet their name has the chance of being looped into this whole fiasco away from the field. That's where it gets sticky. So then I thought to myself, why in the world have the spring game at this point? You know, why not postpone or cancel it? Because you draw unneeded attention. You gain nothing from having the spring game. It's spring football. It, you know, this isn't going to go towards your record next year. You know, it's just for the fans. It's to feed the college football fandom. You know, when they're having a spring game, you know, spring football kills me because as far as my interest goes for spring football, it's very limited. Yeah, I want to know what's taking place as far as certain position battles go because it gives you kind of a glimpse into what the team will look like next year. But the spring game, I mean, guys are kind of going half speed other than the guy who's trying to work his way up for a possible starting role. I mean, it's hard to draw hard conclusions after watching a spring game because it's way too early. It's spring. It's March. Heck, we're talking about college basketball right now, let alone a spring game happening on the same day as the Final Four out in Phoenix, Arizona. As far as my fandom goes, I've never been excited about spring football. So I just don't know what you gain from it. I don't know. I think Coach D'Antonio was trying to change the dialogue because right now it's a negative dialogue that's surrounded around his program when concerning the investigation. Trying to get fans to just focus on football right now, but I think having a game where you have three unnamed football players in front of the public, it does more harm than good. That's just me. I think they could have postponed it or canceled it or held the spring game privately. If you want to see these guys battle it out, why not just hold the spring game amongst yourselves? I don't know. I'm curious to hear your thoughts on it. From the public standpoint, anyone who is attending or plans to attend that game tomorrow, weather permitting, of course, looks as though tomorrow's going to be a nice day in the 50s. Sun out, partly cloudy. What do you think? 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Few storylines I will be watching myself along with engineer Isaac Constance. We will be on the clock covering that spring game for you. So moments after it ends. And by the way, I want to give a big shout out to former Current Sports Production Assistant Darian Harris. He will be on the call for the Big Ten Network as an analyst for that game. How cool is that? Congrats to Darian. Does a great job on the year. I hear him in various forms at local sports talk shows around the area. He's been a guest on our show multiple times, doing his thing. He's actually going to be playing in the Canadian Football League pretty soon. So congrats to Darian. I'm looking forward to seeing how he does on the air tomorrow afternoon. I know he's going to do a good job. All right, but when it comes to the game, though, a few things to look for other than the whole drama, right? On the field, though, the safety position, you know, Michigan State knew that safety, Demetrius Cox, was going to go pro this spring, right? However, Monte Nicholson's leaving for the NFL draft a year early does not bode well for the safety group for the Michigan State football secondary. This gives guys like Kari Willis, local kid, and Grayson Miller opportunities to really take charge in that secondary. Looking forward to seeing if Willis and Miller can make some plays there. Other players also like Kenny Like and Demetric Vance will have their chances to crack D'Antonio's safety rotation. The depth at wide receiver, this is another thing. R.J. Shelton, the most efficient wide receiver for this team last year. R.J. is now gone to test his talents in the NFL draft. And not only did Shelton make plays in pass catching, but he also factored in returning kicks on special teams. He was a do-it-all guy. Wide receiver Monte Medeiros and tight end Josiah Price have also exhausted their collegiate eligibility. And now you look at sure thing sophomore wide receiver Donnie Corley, who I expect to see on that field tomorrow. Donnie Corley, he's one of those players who has such a tremendous upside. He's so athletic. Really looking forward to seeing if Donnie Corley can have a great year next season. I'll be keeping an eye on him. And also, you look at the other receiving core besides Corley, Felton Davis III, Tristan Jackson, and even early enrollee Hunter Risen, the son of Andre Risen. Bad Moon Risen, that's right. Hunter's got good genes, let's just say that. And looking at some of the cryptic tweets on Twitter from a few of the Michigan State football assistant coaches, it looks as though Hunter has been turning heads throughout spring practice. Looking forward to seeing Hunter on the field tomorrow. And, yeah, the big question, Brian Lewerke. It looks as though he will be the starter for next year. I don't know. Anything could happen in spring practice, right? Of course, it's going to be a three-man horse race there with Brian Lewerke, Messiah DeWeaver, Damian Terry. I think Lewerke, though, you know, I think he may be as good as it gets right now at the quarterback position for Michigan State. Lewerke had won the starting job last season for the Spartans, but then Tyler O'Connor comes and takes it from him, if you will. And then, you know, Tyler wasn't having a great year. And then in the middle of the year, you see D'Antonio test the talents of other quarterbacks like Brian Lewerke. We saw Lewerke come in and do some work. So I think Lewerke may be the guy this upcoming year. We'll see. We'll see if he starts at that position tomorrow afternoon. But that's a few things to look at, all right? It's a few things to look at besides all of the drama. I want to know what you think. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Later on this hour, we are going to talk about the Detroit Pistons fighting for their playoff lives. I want to pose this question, though, before we hit this first break and talk some college basketball. Isaac Constance, our engineer of WKAR's Current Sports. Isaac, you are a big NBA fan. And, you know, driving into the station today, I started thinking. I was listening to SiriusXM's NBA radio, you know, as I usually do on a drive in. I kind of flip back and forth between a few other sports talk stations as well. And you know what? I started to think about this whole talk about the triple-double this year, right? James Harden, Russell Westbrook. Heck, we even saw Draymond Green earlier this year have a triple-double, the first to have a triple-double without having double digits in the points category. Pretty impressive stuff. Russell Westbrook does it, scores the most points in NBA history when it comes to the triple-double, throwing up 57. We've seen some remarkable things happen this year in the National Basketball Association when it comes to that stat line. But I started to think and really ask myself, especially when it in the conversation of Westbrook and Harden, because they seem to do it every other night, it seems like. Russ seems to do it every single night. Is the triple-double a bit overrated? I wanted to ask that because, you know what, I sat back and thought about all the greats who have played the game of basketball, and Michael Jeffrey Jordan, who is the gold standard of the game, right? A lot of people, the majority out of basketball fans out there, consider Mike to be the greatest basketball player of all time. So I started to think of myself on the drive in. I said, okay, Mike is in many ways the gold standard of anyone who comes into the league. I can't even remember how many triple-doubles Mike had throughout his career off the top of my head. Do you know how many?
It's probably a negligible amount. No, I wouldn't imagine it's anything.
But the point is,
a few.
But the point is, we don't even know.
Yeah,
we don't know. You know, I think of Magic Johnson, who had a ton of triple doubles throughout his NBA career. A lot of people consider him to be on the Mount Rushmore of ball players. I couldn't tell you off the top of my head how many triple doubles Irvin Magic Johnson had. But yet, every day, when Russell Westbrook throws up these crazy numbers, when James Harden fills the stat line as well and has a triple-double, everyone's going nuts over the triple-double. Heck, the Big O, the last player to average a triple-double throughout an NBA year back in the 60s, the Big O is not considered to be the greatest basketball player of all time. He isn't considered to even be on many people's Mount Rushmore. A lot of people consider him to be a top 10 guy. But
some people don't. Is a fair view.
Some people don't. So I started to even go further there. I started to have this deep conversation with myself. I always have like these deep sports conversations with myself.
In the car while driving.
Yeah, right?
Classic place.
Yeah, and I started to think even more about it. I'm sitting there thinking to myself, okay, Russell Westbrook, who I love. And I think it's so hard to choose who is the MVP this year. I mean, you could go with Harden. You could go with Westbrook. You can make a solid case for either one of those guys. Heck, you could even make a case for LeBron James or even Kawhi Leonard, right? But efficiency is the word I think about here as well. Because Russell Westbrook, and I saw this stat last night on NBA TV. Russell Westbrook, in comparison to the average NBA player in 2017, he shoots 400 more shots than the average player in today's game. Just think about that, 400 more shots To take that even further, another stat about Westbrook I saw, and not to knock on Westbrook's game, I love him. He's a thrill to watch. He's becoming my favorite player in the league. I love his competitiveness. I just love his game. But to take that even further, from the standpoint of efficiency, Russell Westbrook is shooting 39.2% against teams who have a 500 or better record. So I start to have this conversation, with myself. Okay, it's great that Russ is throwing up these huge numbers, and in many ways, it's equating to wins. The Thunder, they're in the playoffs. And heck, James Harden's doing the same thing. The Houston Rockets are in the playoffs. And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, okay, it's working. They're getting wins. But from an individual standpoint of efficiency and shooting efficiency, heck, if you give me 400 more shots, maybe, I may not be knocking on the door of a triple-double because rebounds and assists.
You'll score one, though? No, I'm kidding. Yeah.
But, I may get one maybe on a good night. But from the standpoint of efficiency, when I look at those stats, Isaac, I think we may be making too big of a hoopla when it comes to the triple-double in 2017. Do you agree or disagree?
I think that's a great point. It's one of the best phrased, best put arguments that I think you've had on the show, honestly. And that's no diminishment to what you've said on the show. I just think that's very well said and very well put. The thing is, I've looked at this for some time, and what I heard a few days ago, and I had heard this before, but I guess I hadn't really taken it into account. The thing with the triple-double is it was not a recognized phenomenon. It was not an accomplishment. It was not anything at all when Oscar Robertson averaged it. Some stat geek went back, and I love stats, I'm a stat guy, but some stat geek went back and thought, 30 points, 10 rebounds, and 10 assists. That's pretty cool. 10 rebounds, 10 assists, 10 points. That's pretty cool, whatever it might be that these guys are averaging. But that became recognized as some glorified accomplishment. But it was just as random as all of these ESPN stats and info things that I know make you a little bit annoyed sometimes, and they annoy me as well. When you see something like Karl Anthony Towns is the first player to average 24.6 steals and three assists over his last three games since 1934.
Right.
It's like, who cares about that? That's such a crafted stat. That's how the triple-double started. And in today's NBA, not only are usage rates higher, usage rates being the percentage of assists, rebounds, points a player gets for his team, it's a really defined metric. And Russell Westbrook has always had one of the best and highest rates of all time. Actually, currently, his rate is second in the NBA, only behind Kobe Bryant in 2005-2006.
Right.
That's when he averaged like 35 points. Russell Westbrook's right there with him. So when you define those metrics, it's very difficult to kind of quantify what this means in a historical context because, like I said, the pool is diluted right now. Not only is Russell Westbrook on the verge of breaking Oscar Robertson's records, but at the same time, LeBron James averaging career highs in triple-doubles. So is James Harden. All of these guys are doing things that they haven't before, and that's just because some stat geek posed the question, made the point, what would it mean if somebody averaged 10 points, 10 assists, 10 rebounds? Mm-hmm. In reality, it's meaningless, but every single player strives for that. And that is why the triple-double right now is recognized as the biggest deal in the NBA. But should it be? I'd agree with you. Probably not.
No, I think we've blown it way out of proportion to a certain standpoint. So, yeah, I had that conversation with myself. And then later on, I'm going to pose this question to Deshaun Tate as well. I was really a deep thinker this morning. I started thinking about the issue of parity in today's sports. I have an interesting question that I will pose to our very own Deshaun Tate, a good friend of the show, who, of course, is a reporter, producer, and host for CBS Radio down in Atlanta. He is, of course, covering the Final Four out in Phoenix, Arizona. But the question of parity in sports, in particular when it comes to college basketball. Really start to think about that as well. Don't go anywhere. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will... Oh, and I see we have Kurt from Grand Ledge on line one. We'll get to a few calls. We'll also invite Deshaun. We have a lot more in store for all of you out here. Don't go anywhere. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. Again, we're taking your calls all the way up until 2 p.m., less than 30 minutes left in the show, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. In segment A, we addressed whether or not the Michigan State football team should even hold the spring game amidst this whole sexual assault investigation that is taking place. And I posed a question whether or not the triple-double in today's NBA is a bit overrated. 517-355-WKAR. Let's take a quick call before we invite our guest for today's Current Sports, Deshaun Tate, college hoops aficionado for CBS Radio down in Atlanta. Of course, Deshaun is out in Arizona covering the Final Four. Before we get to Deshaun, let's go to line one. We've got Kirk from Grand Ledge that wants to chime in. Kirk, what's up, my man?
Not a whole lot, Al, but I heard you discussing efficiency with Russell Westbrook, and I wanted to chime in with some information to add to your conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So the other night was, I think it was the night that Westbrook went off for 57 points and whatever on his triple-double. And Scott Van Pelt on the late night Sports Center thing was debating the whole MVP thing, Westbrook versus Harden, and he threw up some numbers that I found very interesting, and that was Russell Westbrook is on pace to take 1,977 shots over the course of the season, which would, I believe he said, set a record for most shots in the season by a player.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, if you're going to take that many shots, you should be scoring some points. Now, I really appreciate the fact that Westbrook has the assists that he does. To me, I like the triple-double, quite frankly, because to me it tells you that you're not just a one-dimensional player. You're just not just a shooter or whatever. But for some of these guys, the triple-double, you know, I am certain that a different kind of point guard, one that leads a fast break all the time or leaks out to the side, would not get nearly as many rebounds as someone who's back helping crashing the boards like Westbrook does. But part of that is just the nature of his team. He needs to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I quite frankly, between the two of them, I like Harden better. Well, and the reason why I like Harden better is because, to me, I never thought he had this in him. I thought he was a pure shooter.
Mm-hmm.
In the past and didn't have the assist numbers and things in his game, and he has certainly flourished under Mike D'Antoni. But, Westbrook is an amazing athlete, and if he wins the MVP, I wouldn't have any knock against him, but I definitely think out of everybody in the NBA, certainly everybody in the NBA this season, he's shooting way more than everybody else. So that should be taken into consideration.
Kirk, great argument. Thank you for your call, my man. I appreciate that. And, you know, I want to add another stat to that as well, Isaac. I saw that Russ and Harden are also on pace to possibly break the record for most turnovers in a year as well. So
that, I think they will.
I think they will. But, I mean, they're the focal point of the team. You know, you talk about the evolution of the game of James Harden. Again, I go back to that article that I read, I believe it was in Sports Illustrated not too long ago, in the evolution of James Harden's game. Mike D'Antoni putting the ball in the hands of Harden on every possession and just running the offense through him. He has the ball in his hands so much, and the same thing is said for Russell Westbrook. The offense goes through them. But also, not to completely bash the triple-double, I just think it's been a bit overrated. When you take in context the one word of efficiency, I do think it's just a bit overrated. But I have to agree with Kirk in saying that the triple-double does let you know that, okay, especially, again, if you're doing it consistently in the assist category, that you are getting or trying to get your teammates involved in play as well. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Let's get to our guest for today's Current Sports. Of course, the Final Four. Oh, I'm excited about this. The Final Four is finally here. Tomorrow night, first game, South Carolina and Gonzaga. That game will take place at 6:09 p.m. out in Phoenix, Arizona, the University of Phoenix Stadium. And then after that, at approximately 9 p.m., you can catch Oregon get it on against UNC. Right now we have on the line a man who is covering the Final Four for CBS Radio Atlanta. It is college basketball aficionado Deshaun Tate. Deshaun, how are you doing, my friend?
Man, Al, I am outstanding. I guess a little windier here than I initiated, thought that it would be. So I apologize for the wind, but I will say this much. It's also a little chillier than I actually prepared for when I was packing my luggage up. Yesterday was right around the 90s, and that's all fine and dandy. I hope you don't hang up on me for the weather. But But today we're talking about 70s, and I'm like, wait a minute, or 60s rather. I didn't prepare for that, but at the end of the day, I guess it could be worse. It's Final Four. The atmosphere here is great, and I'm just looking forward to some really good basketball this weekend.
I tell you, Deshaun, you really know how to butter us up. You start off by just rubbing the weather in our face. It's about like 30 degrees and cold, shivering cold here. But Deshaun, enjoy it, my man. I was in Arizona not too long ago, and I love the atmosphere. It's a great place to be. So I'll start with this, Deshaun. South Carolina and Oregon. I mean, you got 2-1 seeds in it with Gonzaga and UNC. But South Carolina and Oregon has been a surprise to most. How in the world did the Gamecocks and Ducks make it to Phoenix?
Well, they just pretty much has hung their hat on the playing style of Frank Martin, their head coach. And, I mean, I think that's ultimately what it came down to, is he just got his guys to believe in the system and what they're trying to do. Remember, this time last year, they had 24 wins under their belt. And when it came down, they obviously run the bubble. They thought they were going to get into the NCAA tournament. The NCAA made a telephone call to USC, and just so happened to be that they had to later on apologize to South Carolina and say, well, we accidentally made the wrong call to the wrong USC. It was for Southern California, not South Carolina. So I think that they took that a little personal, kind of as an insult a little bit, which we can all kind of understand. But they wanted to make sure they were never in that position again. So they just took care of business, hung their hats defensively, as defensive anchor type of team. And I think that Oregon did the exact same thing, especially considering the fact that I think that they're not only the toughest team in the West Coast in general, Gonzaga included, the Pac-12, but also one of the toughest teams in the country nationally.
Deshaun, what's more likely to happen, Oregon or South Carolina pulling up the upset?
I think that I think it's equal, to be honest. I mean, Oregon is probably the most disrespected team going into this weekend just because of the feel-good story and everything that South Carolina has done. I mean, think about it. South Carolina beat Baylor by 20 points. I'm not sure if I imagine South Carolina beating anybody all season by 20 points. That was a legitimate Power 5 conference, let alone a team like Baylor, who got all the way up to number one in the country earlier in the season.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you're talking about a team like Oregon, some people had Oregon as a preseason number one, definitely a top five team coming off an Elite Eight from last year. So all those things being considered, I don't think it would be much of an upset if Oregon beat North Carolina as much as it would South Carolina beating Gonzaga, just because of the fact that Gonzaga has a number one, their name the same way North Carolina. But who really knows the way that this is going to go? I mean, we think, Al, that, you know, obviously it's North Carolina's championship to lose, especially coming off of a heartbreaking national championship game last year. But none of this stuff, as we know, you can make out and win on paper. On paper, it looks like it's North Carolina's to lose, but and Gonzaga in the title game, those are my picks. How surprised would we be after seeing how things have shaken out all season long to see South Carolina against Oregon for a national championship?
They call it March Madness for a reason, my man. And you know what? I want to focus on the Oregon and North Carolina matchup just briefly here, because I find the road that the Ducks have taken to get to this point quite interesting, and particularly when it comes to Chris Boucher, who was injured in the Pac-12 tournament, out for the rest of the season. And we've seen Dylan Brooks really, you know, step up in lieu of that absence. Who has the edge? I'm curious. Who has the edge in the Isaiah Hicks versus Dylan Brooks matchup? Because I think that's going to be key.
Oh, by far, by by far, I believe that it's Dylan Brooks. He's this guy that I felt like coming into the season was probably, coming into the tournament, that was the one guy I felt like could, you know, kind of put his team on his back and will them all the way this far to a Final Four and even potentially a much longer run. So I definitely give Dylan Brooks, you know, the credit on that one, or the edge, rather, over Isaiah Hicks. And Isaiah Hicks is the X factor for North Carolina. Let's just face it. If he can find a way to stay out of foul trouble, because he's underachieved as a player at North Carolina, my personal opinion, kind of reminds me of a guy they had a few years ago by the name of James Michael McAdoo, mm-hmm. who I don't think really panned out the way that a lot of people in Chapel Hill thought that he would either. But if Isaiah Hicks can not only just give production and stay on the floor and out of foul trouble, I think that North Carolina will look probably they'll probably have a really good shot at looking their very best that we've seen in this whole tournament, even including the game against 16-seed UC Davis.
And on the flip side of that conversation, Deshaun, can Oregon avoid foul trouble? Because North Carolina is a team that actually drew 19 fouls against Kentucky. John Calipari had to go to his bench and really stretch his team out throughout the elongated process of that game. He went into post-game presser and addressed the referees and said that, hey, the referees kind of mulled us over in that game, and I didn't like some of the calls they made, so much so that one of the referees was receiving death threats from some of the Kentucky fan base. That's another story for another time. But can Oregon avoid foul trouble, something that North Carolina really did well against Kentucky last week?
I think they can. The biggest reason for that is because of what they're very disciplined defensively, and I think that's one of the more impressive things about this Oregon team. And Dana Altman, although I think that Dana Altman has that ability to be, I guess you can say, vulnerable to being outcoached, but this guy is still a very good coach at the end of the day. Remember, before McDermott and McDermott's dad and all that good stuff at Creighton was still a nationally respected program, but that's because of who Dana Altman was out there in Omaha. So in regards to what they put together, he has that same type of mentality that he took from Creighton into Oregon. When you think West Coast basketball, you typically don't think defense. It's the same way it is in football. A lot of high-powered offense, not very much focus on defense. They try and outscore you on the other end. And the team that wins isn't always the better team. Sometimes the team that wins is the team that ends up with the ball last and has the most points at the end of the game, which I know that seems pretty obvious. But in the same token, one thing I will say is that they do hang their hats on defense, and when you put defense with their offense that they already have in motion there in Eugene, then it's a recipe for success, that's for sure.
Deshaun Tate, college basketball producer, reporter, and host for CBS Radio down in Atlanta. He is at the Final Four in Phoenix, Arizona. Exciting times, I tell you that, Deshaun. Deshaun, speaking of defense, though, South Carolina, the best defensive team throughout this tournament. What has allowed, though, and I don't want to talk defense just yet when it comes to the Gamecocks, but on the flip side, you know, that supporting cast has stayed hot for the Gamecocks. The combination of Sindarius Thornwell, who has scored 20 points in 9 of his last 11 games, and then you have Chris Silva and Mate Kotsar combining for 25 points on 15 shots against Florida the other day. What has allowed that supporting cast to gel so nice throughout this tournament, clicking at the right time?
Well, I think it's because that they had the help from two other guys that don't get nearly as much recognition and are probably the best two complementary players to any one star player that's remaining in the NCAA tournament, and that's PJ Dozier and Dwayne Notis, two guys that I think have definitely overachieved and have been doing a good job all season, still continuing to win games. I know they lost 6 of their last 9 entering the NCAA tournament, but I will say enough to say that there was a point in time when some off-the-court issues or whatnot played an unfortunate part in Sindarius Thornwell's career, and those two guys had to come in and step up in the play. And so when you bring a guy back who had to kind of overcome some adversity, like Sindarius Thornwell, and then eventually become I guess you could say, the conference player of the year. You put all those things, mix it together, the combination of it all is really what is basically leading them on to the wonderful run that they're having right now.
All right, before we get you out of here, Deshaun, and get you back to enjoying that BEA beautiful weather out in Arizona.
Yeah,
so,
man.
Again, I think you already gave us the answer here to this, though. You think you have Gonzaga and North Carolina playing for the national championship on Monday night. Is that correct?
That's who I have. I think that's the consensus of it right now. And the same token, like I said earlier, you almost just really, really never know with this thing. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me the least bit to see South Carolina beat Gonzaga. My concern with Gonzaga is, you know, are they going to feel like, or are they going to come out and play like they've already achieved something? Because there was so much focus on them getting to the Final Four. Now that they've got there, they kind of feel like they've gotten the respect that they need. But in the same token, you know, will they kind of let up off the gas a little bit versus a team who, you know, really feels like that they are the most confident team in South Carolina? More than anything. So I think in that respect, I think I still have to stick with Gonzaga, North Carolina in the end, in North Carolina to cut down the nets. I mean, it's been almost a decade since Carolina has done it. And they leave this one on the table, which we know Roy Williams is somewhat known for, going all the way back to dating his days in Kansas. It wouldn't surprise me, but I'm taking Carolina.
Deshaun, I want to leave you with a broad thought I had this morning concerning parity in the world of college basketball. We have 2-1 seeds playing for the Final Four out in Arizona this weekend. Heck, in the women's bracket, you have a 1-2 versus 1-2 there.
Right.
North Carolina was runner-up in last year's national championship game. And I really couldn't help but think to myself that parity is one of those things, especially when you talk about the creme de la creme national championships in that sport. Heck, in the sport of basketball in general, heck, in the NBA, you can pretty much guess that there's probably about maybe, what, 2 to 4 teams that are going to make it to the NBA Finals. And you can pretty much take that bet to Vegas, and the chances are pretty high that 2 of those 4 teams are going to make it there. You know what really startled me, though, when I saw a statistic when it comes to transfers in today's college basketball world? There were over 700 players last year, Deshaun, that transferred in the world of college basketball across this great nation. I really think that is hurting the world of college basketball in general. Have we seen parity go out the window when it comes to this sport?
I wouldn't say out the window. I definitely say that it still somewhat exists in some cases. But the blue blood programs are still going to continue to be the blue blood programs. Certain guys are just going to, you know, want to team up, same way we see a lot of times happen. And not just LeBron and the Cavs, a lot of, you know, or the Warriors even, but even in a lot of other teams as well. So there's still going to be some guys that follow suit like that. But then you're also going to have some guys that feel like, you know what, I want to put my own name, my own stamp personally on a program that's not really known for basketball. And it seems like that's what some of the guys from South Carolina, amongst other teams, have done. So to answer your question, I do truly believe that it's a combination of both.
For Gonzaga, 3 of its 4 top scorers are, you guessed it, transfers. Deshaun Tate, producer, reporter, and host for CBS Radio down in Atlanta. Deshaun, we hope to talk to you on Monday after this whole Final Four is set in stone and we find out who's playing for a national championship. Could we get you on the show?
Sounds good. I'd love to.
Deshaun Tate. Deshaun, enjoy your time out in Arizona, my friend.
Thank you so much.
Let's hit our final break. When we come back, we will put a bow on today's current sports by hitting you with Reflection Friday.
Tired of all this friction, baby, you're what I've been missing. Won't you hear me out, just listen, you're what I've been missing. I'm tired of all this friction.
Oh, yes. That's one of the smooth grooves. Get this. Of one of our very own Current Sports production assistants, Ian Hawley. That is the voice of Ian Hawley. I had no idea, Isaac, that Ian was an R&B singer. Ian, we have Ian right here live in our studios. We have Romero Hardy Jr. as well as Ian Hawley, two of our great PAs who have been with us throughout this semester. They've done a great job. But Ian and I, we were chatting one day before the show, and Ian played a few tracks, and Ian, I was absolutely floored. Brother, you are pretty talented, man.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Man, where can I get that, too? I want to know.
Yeah. Can people listen to that on iTunes?
All right, so me and my buddy have been making music for about a month and a half straight now, and we're waiting to release the whole album at once.
Wow.
So we're not putting out any singles. We're trying to do the whole thing, packaged and done, deal at the same time. So
wow.
It'll be on SoundCloud when it comes out. I haven't even made the page yet, so we're waiting to get everything done first.
That is unbelievably cool. And we'll follow up next week when it comes to your music. I think it's a very cool story. Not only do you cover sports for us, Ian, but you are an R&B artist. I'm still taking that news in. You know what? Also, I'm pretty excited. You guys know I'm a big hip-hop head, and Romero, you are as well. I see that because you commented on my Facebook page when I posted this. Kendrick Lamar has come out with two tracks that I assume are going to be on his new album. And he released a track last night entitled Humble. And the track is anything but humble. It's a play on words there. The music video is off the chain. Kendrick is taken. I think that Kendrick, just my opinion, is the best rapper in the game right now. That's just my opinion. But the new tracks he's released is pretty cool.
It's definitely hard to argue that fact. I mean, it's there.
Yeah.
I mean, two songs right now shut down the whole internet.
They are. They certainly are.
I mean, you know, you had Drake who dropped one of the biggest albums of the year. Those two songs come out. Where's that album now?
Yeah, I agree. And I think Drake, and I've said this about Drake, man. Drake's album is more of a playlist. I don't know. All right.
It is.
Well, we got to say goodbye. It's been a great week here on WKER's Current Sports. Back at it, same time, same place on Monday. Take care. And be easy, people.